This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boonwurrung people of the Kulin Nation, the land on which we're lucky enough to raise our sons and daughters. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hey, before we get into today's episode, just a quick reminder that if you have someone that is currently pregnant and thinking about all the things that are ahead of them, from postpartum planning to breastfeeding and returning to paid work, to how on earth to navigate the childcare system and what they need to do now, we have just the guides for them. You can shop our Ready or Not go-to guides, Postpartum and Return to Work Planning, Breastfeeding and Returning to Work, and Childcare 101 for $69 as a bundle or $29 individually. They're packed full of information created with experts, and I personally think they're brilliant. You can shop them now in our show notes or readyornot.au. And I know times are tough, so here's a discount. Use Ready10 to get 10% off at the checkout. For decades, women and mothers have been hiding. We cover up our breasts as we feed our babies because since forever, our breasts have been sexualized. How dare you get those tardy things out to offer nourishment to that hungry, tired love of your life? Put them away. We hide the blood that drops between our legs because we've been told that it's disgusting. And what's more repulsive, more unattractive, more intolerable, they tell us, is the mood swings that it brings. A woman on her period, they say, is crazy. And often, as that blood descends into postpartum underwear, into nappies, into pads, we hide the depths of our feelings as we navigate the throes of early motherhood. Because we're meant to be grateful. We're meant to be giving. We're meant to be naturally good at it. That doesn't leave much room for comfort in motherhood. In fact, it creates a feeling entirely opposite to warmth, and that is loneliness. And it was when Kesha Hutchins and Arielle Bryant were walking the streets of Melbourne with their third babies that they wondered, interrogated even, why there wasn't a safe space for mothers to go, to think, feel, learn, question, laugh, and cry. And so they created From Day One. A space that is pulling mothers from outside of their own four walls and bringing them their village. From how the two co-founders have made work work over the years of growing their families, to the magic that they're witnessing between the mothers who are making up the village that is From Day One, this is a special conversation about loneliness and the antidote to it. I'm Lucinda, this is Ready or Not, and here is the inspiring and intelligent Kesha Hutchins and Arielle Bryant. Arielle and Kesha, you both come from pretty corporate backgrounds. If you look back to those people maybe working in their 20s in more corporate fields, could you ever have imagined the sort of business that you would one day create?
Yeah, I've always had a very corporate, I think Kesha Moore herself has been a little bit more entrepreneurial, but I've always worked for very large companies. And I always thought that was going to be my career path. And it kind of was until it was shaken a bit. But no, I couldn't imagine like opening up my own business. But I think that might have been different for you.
Yeah, I have always felt the pull of creating something from scratch. I'm the daughter of an entrepreneur, so it's always been in my family. And I actually felt after having kids that I wanted to get back into it again and do something. And I just felt extremely frustrated that I didn't know what it was at the start. So yeah, flashing back to firstborn 8 years ago, I sort of got a bit of a postpartum surge of creativity after and thought, oh yeah, this is, I can't really see myself going back into a corporate career. But yes, without knowing where you're channeling it, it can be quite frustrating.
I feel like that's a frustration so many mothers go through, is knowing they want something different, but not really knowing what that different thing is. So I think a lot of people can relate to that, and I'm sure we'll hear that unfold. Let's take it back to pre-kids. What were each of you up to, and what sort of career do you think you were trying to pave the way for yourself?
Oh, I wanted to be like a CEO. From the time that I started working in corporate retail, I've always been in buying and merchandising in the US, and then did buying when I moved to Australia. Very different job than it is in the US, to say that. But I thought that I was going to, like, I entered like training programs for And it's really funny because now that I look back, there was always something that happened that kind of threw me off of the path, maybe. So I wound up here. But yeah, I was going to business school. I really wanted to, you know, be that woman in charge of a retail company.
And what about you, Kesha? What did you see for yourself?
A similar thing. My background is in fashion. So I just thought that that's what my life would be. And I didn't really see it changing until I had kids. And then suddenly.
And then the big plot twist.
Child doesn't really, really conducive with, you know, a fast fashion paced life that is, you know, there's no start and end point. Even in, you know, retail buying, you're working on one, like you're forecasting one season, you've got one season in store on the retail floor, and then you've got stock that you're moving from a past season. So there really is no definitive end point where you can stop, take a breather and say, yes, well done, like well done. And
work done for the day.
Yes. And that became quite challenging to fit kids in and around that. So, yeah.
And so you're both paving the way for these big careers, busy careers, fast-moving lifestyles. I love the humbleness of you both. No one could probably hear that because I was talking at the time, but you're both laughing. Very humble, but that's what I see on the outside. We're always our harshest critics. I want to know, how did you feel about babies then if you were both working through these pretty fast-paced lifestyles?
Look, I'm from New York, so there's a very different mentality there. Like, you don't have babies until you're in your mid to late 30s. Your career is your life. You work from 9 until 9. I had a mother who had a massive job. She was the breadwinner and like the big wig in the family. My dad did school pickup and he's had his own company. He was an entrepreneur, but he had his own company, worked for people. But it was always the thought that you could have it all, but then you never really saw anyone actually doing that in New York because you didn't know what was happening behind the scenes. I remember at my second job that I had, it's pretty much, and I don't know if you found this in fashion, but nobody had children. It was just one of those things. Everyone was just a career woman. And I had one manager, Amy, who had a baby. And it was like, wow. Like, what? And she would leave the office at like 6 o'clock. And we were like, where is she going? Like, there wasn't like that, like, foundation of you can have everything. This is what like a career and a motherhood looks like. So I don't think it was really very apparent to me living in New York. And then when I moved to San Francisco, I met my husband in New York when he was on holiday. Good story, not for now. But he hated New York, so we ended up moving to San Francisco. And there it was a bit better, I will say that. There's a bit more, you know, there were so many moms on my team. I saw that you could have a bit of balance, but they're also still working in like you said, like deadlines. You know, and I worked in furniture and we're not saving lives, like go home to your kids. But you saw that, like, you have to be here, the impetus of like, there was never that, again, that foundation of, yes, you can have kids and you can have a career. It was always kind of like, how do you make it work? If that makes sense.
Did that leave you feeling like flabbergasted or scared? Or how did that leave you feeling about your motherhood journey?
Having kids for a while, my husband was very much ready to have a baby the second we got married. And I was like, no, we're traveling, we're working. I had a great job. I had a great career. I wanted to get to the next level and like get all these things, you know, like I said, back in the day, I was very fixated on that. But I just didn't think it was possible at that point. Like, it wasn't what I wanted until I realized that I had reached that point where, okay, like kids are a yes. And then you kind of have to figure out a way for yourself. Like, you have to figure out what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And looking around at, and that's, you know, Kesha's point of corporate doesn't really work with having kids. Not saying that works for everyone, but maybe just the industry that we both happen to be in the same industry. Maybe that isn't really conducive to having a young family. And maybe that's why so many people take breaks.
Yeah. And what about you, Kesha, on the other side of the pond in Melbourne, working away? What were you thinking about what motherhood might look like and how did it make you feel before you entered it?
I'm from a big family, so I've always had kids in my orbit around. I didn't really have many friends that had kids before me, but I probably somewhat naively assumed that it would just happen. And when it happened, I would just deal with it and make it work. And, you know, I didn't really think about logistically and mentally, emotionally, psychologically, I just didn't think about it. I just thought when you're in a career that you largely still in control of, that you have all the time control in the world over your life, when you exercise, when you, you know, socialize, when you go out, you know, with your partner, you have time control. And I think I didn't really anticipate how much that would actually change post kids. And I think maybe in hindsight, that was a good thing, because I probably didn't question it, or maybe I would have put off having them had I known what an impact it would have had on my life as a whole. But when I did have kids, I was one of the first of my friends to have kids. So that in itself brought changes and challenges with not knowing what to expect, really. And also then trying to hold up a sort of unrealistic standard of what I thought motherhood should have looked like from the outside.
I look back to one of my best friends who had the baby first, and there's so many things now that I think, far out, that must have been hard and lonely. Like, from the what does this symptom mean to how do I actually return to work? There's so much there that I'm like, gee, that must have felt lonely, because I was probably on the back end or the middle end of when my friends were having kids. So then I want to take you both back to pregnant with your first babies. How did work go alongside pregnancy?
I actually started a new role at 3 months pregnant. So I basically went for the interview and had to tell her on the spot that I was pregnant.
Was that because you were nervous not to? Like, is that just your personality?
Yes, I think so. I didn't feel like I could have withheld that, and then, I didn't feel right about taking the role. And it was sort of a contractor role. So I did sort of feel like if I'd set it up front, then at least I could just say, this is how long you have me for. And it worked out well, because I said, you know, I'll be keen to come back after I give birth. And I sort of, was like, I'll be fine, you know, 3 months, 4 months postpartum. Yes, like, sign me up. So I think that's, in hindsight, it worked well because of the transparency. So I sort of had a contract time limit on it. So that, but I had was very fortunate to have a very cruisy first pregnancy. So that also helped. I don't feel like it impacted my ability to work, but that probably also then gave me a false hope of what my output post baby as well, thinking, it's not really going to change that much. So easy pregnancy, crazy pregnancy, and then false hope into postpartum.
And Ariel, you had that backdrop of the US culture, which is a bit different to Australia, I think. How did that inform how you went through pregnancy as a worker?
So it's very different. So I was working in California when I was pregnant, and California is a very liberal state, and they've got a lot of worker rights and things in play, which was great. So I was very open with my team that I was pregnant. And then turns out there were two other women on my team that were pregnant at the same time, which was slightly unfortunate, but it was great. I had really bad, it's called symphysis pubic disorders. I think it's called girdle disorder here. I've got a different name here, but I have it to really bad, to the point of like crutches and being unable to walk. I had it for all three pregnancies. Very fun. So I actually had to go out on modified leave when I was 36 weeks pregnant. And in California, you get 1 month before and then 6 months afterwards, which was great. But I knew that we wanted to move to San Francisco. Sorry, we wanted to move to Melbourne. So we had made plans, because we were living in San Francisco by ourselves. So we were like, either New York or Melbourne, we're going to figure it out. But I knew that we were moving. And so I put my hand up for a redundancy package and ended up taking that, because I knew I had to go out. I knew I was going to have to go on modified bed rest. So I was just like, it might just be better, and can figure it out from there. So I had a very different experience than the other two women. And when they found out about it, they were both like, can we have it too?
And could they?
No.
No. Sorry, girls, this is
I think they were doing like, when they do a lot of, it's the US, they do a lot of like shifting around, and there's always restructuring, corporate restructuring happens like every 10 minutes. And they're really great. And especially in California, because there's so many workers' rights and protections. But I got an incredible package, which allowed me to have almost 8 weeks off. I think it was like 7 weeks off prior to giving birth, and then 6 months of paid leave, which was amazing. So I think it would have been different had I not had that, because I would have had to work up till 36 weeks with being unable to walk in San Francisco. And if anyone's ever been to San Francisco, it's a city of hills.
Yeah.
I lived on the highest hill in San Francisco at the very top, which was great.
Perfect. For what were you just perched up there for the end of your pregnancy? I'm not leaving this hill.
Well, it was really hard. I ended up taking the bus and like couldn't. Yeah. Anyway, long story. But so I had a different experience. But yeah, I worked straight up. I had always planned on working. So doing that, I'd only taken like 2 weeks off for holiday up until that point. So I'd never taken an extended time off. So that was also pretty shocking.
And what did that do for you in sense of identity and maybe even ego? I think a lot of us were productive, productive, productive. And then you had that extra layer of dealing with this pain and not being able to walk properly. What did that do for your mind at that time? Was that like the first letting go before motherhood? Like it was like this invaluable lesson?
I think it was. And I think it changed me a lot because you felt have this like, one, it was like this guilt of like everyone else is still working and I'm sitting around. It's not really a thing in the US. I think it might have changed a little bit with COVID, but like we are workers and we work really hard. And for me, sitting around was really difficult. I ended up tagging on to like my husband's work trips because I was like, what else am I doing? And I was, you know, had up until what, 34 weeks to travel. So we did a couple of trips, but like it changed my mindset. And I think it made me slow down a bit going into motherhood, and especially because I couldn't physically move, which also was, you know, a big shift. I had to just sit and sit with myself and figure out things. And that is confronting, but I think it was even more confronting like up front, because afterwards you have the distraction of the baby and I knew we were moving. I knew we were making the plans to move. So that was fine. But up until that point, I was just like, I had like 2 solid months of just doing nothing. So yeah, I think to your point about like it being a big change and maybe a good shift for me to be home for those 2 months prior to giving birth. I mean, it's kind of forced. I couldn't move. So sitting in one spot, but I think that also like after working nonstop for 10 years and having this, you know, career trajectory and that's who I was. And, you know, it's very different. Like I said, I keep on saying like the difference in the US to here, but like, it's like very much career driven and people ask what you do prior to, you know, where'd you go to high school? Or like, that's your big thing. Like, what do you do for a living? Like that's kind of who you are. And that was all tied up in that. And I knew that we were moving to Australia. So I had that to kind of think about and plan for after the birth, but that was still like a year away. It took us longer to find a house to move. But yeah, I definitely did have a massive shift. And I think it did help to be sitting home thinking about that prior to just doing like cold turkey off work into a baby.
Yeah, which is such a common experience. Someone clocks off one day and they have a baby the next. Maybe that's not the plan, but it just happens because they need money and they need to work or they want to. So it is like a wild shift that can happen overnight. Talking about that shift, you both enter early motherhood, you meet your newborns. What do you reflect on most when you think of that time with your first babies?
Oh, just a completely different shift in everything, really. Just, I mean, people tell you, they try to give you advice, but nothing really prepares you, I think, for what you experience. And I think, yeah, obviously amazing, incredible times, but also really challenging moments that really push you to your limits.
Did that surprise you, Kesha? Because it sounds like you're similar to me in that you grew up around a lot of babies, maybe considered yourself maternal, whatever that means. But if you're around a lot of babies and knew for a long time you wanted a family, did it then surprise you? Because I felt quite jarred by what I found challenging.
I agree. And I think the conflicting emotions, like feeling, you know, that you might feel like you're not enjoying it, and that is, then you feel guilty about that. Or you might feel that you are like wishing for it, a certain part of it to end or be over. And then you also feel bad because you're like, well, I know they're going to grow up so fast and then I'm going to look back and I'm going to regret, you know, there's just so many conflicting emotions that go on. And I think also living up to your own expectations of what you thought a good mother should be as well, I think was really challenging. So I think, yeah, having a certain perception in your mind, and that if you are finding it tough, then you must be failing at something or not doing it right. Or, you know, if you have to ask for help, then again, like if you're coming from a career where you sort of thrived off not asking for help or, you know, being able to capable and doing things.
Oh, that's such a good point. I've never made that link. We're being told to like be independent and impressive and just figure things out. And then all of a sudden you're thrown into motherhood.
Yeah. And if you're in a corporate career and in any kind of career really, and you're used to sort of being self-sufficient and, you know, showing initiative and being a self-starter and problem solving and figuring things out on your own and not relying on other people in the sense of like your own being able to achieve things on your own, you then are thrown into motherhood and it really is on you. Like, you know, you can get support from your network and you can outsource and you can do things like that. But ultimately it's kind of like when you're alone with your baby and your baby's crying, you kind of, it's on you. You know, there's no, you can really just pick up the phone and say like, come and help, you know, come and help me with this. And I think we also put a lot of pressure on ourselves as well to be the one that stops our baby crying or gets our baby to sleep or makes everything okay as mothers. That's sort of what we put on ourselves. So yeah, I did find it quite jarring and quite challenging. And I was also annoyed that I found it challenging as well. I felt like that was also something that I felt at the time I should have found easier maybe.
And that's a really interesting perspective. I think I can relate to that a lot. So then what about you, Arielle? You're still in America. You've got this move coming and you've got a new baby. Tell us all about that.
So I have a brother who was born when I was 19. So I was around, I've experienced like the newborn phase. So that I knew that they were going to cry. I knew that they were not going to sleep. I knew how hard all of that stuff was. I think that the shock, I will never forget like leaving the hospital and being like, that's it. Like,
this is forever.
Baby life.
Like, that's it. Like, No, like, what do I do? Nobody's going to tell me what to do. Like, I have absolutely no idea. I think that, like, I thought that I knew what to expect having been in the house with the baby because I was over my summer holidays and I was away at uni, but like, I came back. I thought that I knew what to expect, but there's like literally no book. I know that people say, oh, this is the book, but there's no book. There's no, and every single baby is different. So your friends can come and help you. One of my best friends in San Francisco had a baby a year before me. So she came into my house one day with 7 pacifiers, dummies, and just laid them out. And she was like, here, choose one. I'm like, but they said, don't give them a pacifier until, you know, they're a month old. And she's like, shut up, put a pacifier in his mouth. He needs it.
Pick your favorite. Pick your poison.
Try one. She literally went to the store and bought 7. So like, I had no idea. I didn't know. I think that was what was shocking. Like, I thought I had been around babies and I knew, but then you have to figure everything out. Kind of to Kesha's point as well. You've got to figure everything out on your own. And it's your baby. And nobody is going to be there saying, and maybe it's because I wasn't in the same, I had my child in San Francisco. And my whole family's in New York. And maybe that would have been different. But I've had friends who are coming over and telling you like, oh, you can try this and try that. But
I think even with amazing support network, it's still very isolating. And
yeah, because it's the mental game, right? It's the things you're thinking about.
It is every minute of every day. And then it's all the things that go on that people don't see as well.
Yeah.
So I think there is, you can't, yeah. And I think that it can be a false sense when you do have a really big support network that I should have this and, you know, oh, for all the support, but there is so much that goes on.
It's the physicality too, I feel. At the moment, Posey's not sleeping well and Hades has been trying to rock her back to sleep at night, but she just simply will not settle besides on the boob at the moment. So there's the weight of those little things that come up that you're like, oh, this literally is on me. The other night he tried to get her to sleep for like 4 hours and he couldn't. And so I'm not going to make him do that again. I didn't realize he'd been up for that long because that's just useless to both of us. And it's like that sort of stuff at the moment feels really on me and he can't take that off me.
You're so physically needed right now. And we were having this conversation the other day with a group of mums because they were asking what the next phase looks like once your children sort of start. Our youngest are both 3 and the mums were asking about and they were shocked. And they were like, what do you mean it doesn't get easier? And we're like, oh, no, it's not that it doesn't get easier. It just is different. So you're less physically needed now, but it's busier and logistics. You know, it doesn't mean that the mental load is any easier, but you're just less physically needed because
it's definitely the physicality. And it's also that I think we all 3 of us have very supportive partners, but they can't actually do anything and they can try. But it's also that level of just, I think it's the shock. That's what it is of taking a new baby home. You are just in shock because people can tell you stuff, but any two people who are highly independent, highly, you know, motivated, functional human beings in life, you think that you've got it. And the second that you get that baby home, you're like, what?
And your relationship is rock
solid. You think that everything is great.
You've never had a fight with your partner before. Oh. And, you know, you've got an amazing friend network and everything.
Everything's great.
Yeah.
It's just shock of like that initial. And I just will never forget that as long as I live, taking that baby home and just being in total and utter shock that this is what it's actually like.
And I had the exact same thing. It sounds like all three of us actually were quite similar in going in not feeling blind. And maybe, I don't know, maybe that sets you up for failure in some ways, I'm now thinking. But because also, you think you know what to expect.
Oh, and I think just the way that we've been conditioned to focus on the birth and everything when you're pregnant is like, oh, you know, I'll prepare for the birth, I'll buy all the things, I'll tick off the lists and, okay, I'm prepared. I've done my class, I've done my... you know, checklist, my nursery is ready, I've got all the baby names, I've got like the hospital bag packed, and then the birth is over in under 48 hours if we're lucky, and then suddenly you haven't actually put any time or energy or resources or money into what the rest of forever looks like.
Yeah, literally the rest of your life.
Yeah, exactly. And that then becomes quite a shock because you think, well, if everyone's told me that the birth is the worst part or the hardest part, and I've just got through that, but then what's next? And I guess there's no reprieve as well. There feels like there is no reprieve if it's night after night, day after day. And I think, yeah, if you haven't actually, again, to your point about like, you know, coming from a career perspective, like if you are used to planning and checking all the lists and setting yourself KPIs, it's very hard to...
There's no plan.
There's no plan. And even if you have a plan, it doesn't necessarily go to plan. So, yeah, I think that initial shock, yeah, was quite significant.
Hope nobody pregnant is listening.
Yeah.
I know, but that's the struggle, isn't it? Because we often think we don't want to scare people, but then I'm like, but then do they feel lonely on the other end because no one's warned them? Where do you get the balance there? Because also I don't want to be scared when I'm in my first pregnancy. I don't think I would have liked that. But then where does the loneliness come in postpartum if no one's told you?
Well, I also think that they don't. We've had this experience like talking because we do, you know, monthly or every 6 weeks we do a pregnancy meetup and we try and talk to, you know, especially first time moms. Second time moms are like on it. They've got their things. They know. But first time moms, because, you know, we ask the question, what have you done to prepare for postpartum? And it's like, oh, I've got all the stuff ready. I don't think you're open to it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Because birth does feel like such an event, maybe. It's hard to get past that.
And maybe you can't imagine what it's like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and especially like maybe that's what it is. Like maybe you can't imagine what it could possibly be like. And then, you know, 3 months rolls around and you're like, well.
And maybe on the beforehand side, you're sort of thinking it's best to figure it out by yourself. And maybe in a lot of ways it is because everyone's experience is so different. But then maybe on the postpartum side, you're thinking, fucking hell, there's a lot more I could have known about this.
Right. Yeah. And I think that with our pregnancy meetups, that's the whole purpose is to really like put women in a room who are due around the same time so that they do have that commonality of there's something to be said about growing through it at the very same time as somebody else because, you know, 1 month postpartum looks very different to 3 months postpartum, which looks very different to 9 months postpartum. So even if you've got friends who have been through it, having someone who is like riding the roller coaster with you, you know, is, yeah.
That's a really good piece of advice, actually, if anyone pregnant is listening. I didn't go to my mother's group because I had so many great friends who had given birth within the year. But having someone weather the exact storm that you're going through at the same time, I noticed that void. One of my best friends was 4 months behind me, but that's eons at the beginning. So I think that's actually a really valuable piece is finding people around the same timeline as you. So let's now take it to thinking about that return to work. So you might not have returned to paid work yet, but you're starting to think about it. Maybe you're starting to plan for it. What does that look like for each of you? And are you feeling excited, nervous, relieved, all of the above? How are you feeling?
So I moved countries. There was that. So that was a big thing. I stayed home with my eldest for over a year. So it took us a bit longer to find a house. Now I understand why living here. But we were like, what is going on? So it took us a little bit longer to get settled than we thought. We had thought that we'd move after 6 months. We ended up moving after he was, I think, 15 months old. And then I got here and my plan was to go to work. Then it was settling into childcare, getting all these things, interviews, all the stuff, getting up and running. It took a lot longer than I anticipated. And again, going back to that, I've always been a worker. I've always wanted to work. I've always had my independence. I know that's not what everyone wants to do, but that's just who I am. I wasn't anticipating staying home. Again, this is like going back to what I said in the beginning, that sometimes like things in life kind of just happened for me. And a woman approached me about coming to work at her company, which was in locally to where I was. It was a furniture company. She was trying to relaunch and rebrand it. And I ended up going back 3 days a week, 2 days in store, and then 1 day at home. And that kind of was the easiest transition for me. It wasn't what I anticipated. I thought I was going to go back corporate immediately and just like jump back. I ended up staying there for like 6 or 7 months and then went back to corporate. But it was a really good, soft transition back to work because it wasn't straight back into 9 to 5. I had never part-time work. It was not even ever on my radar. I know it's, we're so lucky to live in a country where it's much more accepted, but that's not a thing where I'm from. Like nobody works part-time. You know, you're back to work after 6 months. You work really hard. I think that's why there's larger gaps between children, because you do go back to work and you do. And I think that was, for me, it ended up being a much softer transition back into working, which might be like a regular thing here. I don't know. Maybe it's just my mentality, but I was like, this is lovely. I get to work 3 days a week, one from home, two from the shop. And like, I thought that was great. I didn't have to travel like I was previously. So that was a really nice transition. And then I went back to corporate, which was.
Before we get to the corporate, what was it like? I guess, what was your headspace like? You just moved countries. I imagine there's some sense of loneliness or, you know, newness, figuring things out. What was it like also starting a new job? I know you say it was lovely, but once you got here, did you feel a real need to get into the workplace because it would give you a sense of community and start to feel like your actual life here?
I think it was really difficult because I have lived in many places, but I didn't I lived in New York, I lived in Washington, D.C., I lived in San Francisco. I think Melbourne's a very small place and everyone knows each other. I assumed that I would, you know, make friends. I ended up working, there was just two of us at the company. She had just owned it. She worked in Sydney. So that wasn't really where I was going to make friends. But I did want to have a community and just like something mentally stimulating for myself.
Yeah, because being with a baby moving overseas, I imagine that your life becomes even more about the baby for that period.
Yeah. And I think that it did. It definitely did. It was just the two of us. My husband was still traveling back and forth. He travels a lot. He was still traveling constantly. And we didn't know anyone. We had been introduced to a few people. And luckily, you know, one or two of those people I'm still very close with today. But I didn't know anyone. My husband, for some reason, all of his best friends, Kesha laughs about this, are not with partners or didn't have children or didn't want children. And those are all of his like group of best friends. So I was just like thrown into it on my own. So it was definitely lonely, but I think it wasn't necessarily the community that I was craving. I wanted something for myself. I wanted to be mentally stimulated. I wanted to have a job and a role that was outside of, you know, being Oscar's mom, because that's who I've always been. I think when I went back to corporate, I made a lot of friends working. But I think that when you have a child, your priorities change. And I think that is the biggest thing that, and I think, you know, Kesha's mentioned it a few times, that like once you have a child, like things don't seem to be as life-shattering in the corporate environment. Like you can't really understand fire drills that seem like life-ending, that you're like, it's just a marketing brief, guys. If it doesn't go out today, it'll go out tomorrow. you know, we're not saving lives here. Like, I think that mentality changes a lot. But I think that's one thing about, you know, going back. But I still just wanted something for myself. And I think that I was changed enough to know that I wanted to work and I wanted to have a place and some mental stimulation, but it wasn't just about the community. It was about me.
Yeah. And before I get to you, Kesha, I'm wondering, I know that you say we get a new perspective of that these things sometimes aren't as important as we think in paid work. But I'm thinking about how sometimes I try and show myself as like the not motherhood version of me when I'm at work still. And there's things that you can't do, like you can't always attend the group lunches or the Christmas party or the Friday drinks. Was it challenging starting in a new city, in a new role, and sort of perhaps showing up more as the motherhood version of you without them seeing the other side to you? Did you feel like you had to prove anything, or were you pretty comfortable in where you were in your identity?
I've always been very comfortable in myself and my identity. I think that's never been an issue for me. So again, I think that I was the only, there's one other woman on my team that had a child in all of my, you know, 45 person team, which I think was surprising to me. But then I reflect back to New York and understanding that nobody really had kids there. Maybe it's the environment, maybe it's the career path I chose. People should speak to children, to teenagers, and say, hey, by the way, maybe this career path is not that conducive to having, you know, a family. I think it's things that we like, and maybe it's the modeling of like having somebody there that could show you that it's okay. But there was nobody else on my team that had a baby. So there was nobody else. Like, I wasn't going, you're right, I wasn't going to drinks. I wasn't going out. I wasn't as socially engaged, but I was okay with that.
Yeah. So you just made peace with that, with where you're at.
I'm one of those very lucky people that has never had FOMO.
Oh, we need to talk because I'm the opposite end of the scale. I'm getting better.
I'm always very confident in my decisions. So I was okay with it, but you also miss out on those building of relationships. And especially as a new person, you know, coming into a team, you miss out on building those relationships and having those moments that kind of help you in the office. But I think that I was okay with it. That's just who I am as a person. So,
well, we all need to take more of that on, because sometimes I'm just like, oh, I wish you could see that before having kids, I did X, Y, and Z. And I feel like you're just seeing this version of me now. What about you, Kesha? What did the lead up to the return to work look like for you? And then what did it actually look like when you did return to paid work?
So I took on a contractor role and I was consulting for a PR company in between each of my kids. So I felt that I needed the mental stimulation pretty quickly. At about, I think it was 4 months, I think I was like, I need to do something. And so I was fortunate enough that in the role I had a bit of time control. So I was able to sort of inch my way back as I felt like I could manage.
And is this with your baby at home with you full time? Because I've also got a new appreciation of that, trying to work with Posey at the moment. I'm like, it's turning into hell.
A bit of both. I was fortunate enough to have my parents not far, so they would help as well. But then I probably set unrealistic expectations on myself to get more done in less time and not let the fact that I had a baby at home impact the quality or the quantity of work that I could do, and that I could still achieve what I was doing pre-baby. But that was all me. I was in a very supportive environment, but I think it was probably just all me, like trying to do too much. And
you want to do the exact same thing that you used to be able to do, but you want to be able to do it on just less sleep.
Yeah. Fit a day's work into one 45-minute nap.
Yeah. If you think about how your mind felt at that time on those days, for me, I've had a lot of days, especially in the last few weeks, where Posey's not sleeping as much, where I'm just like, this is chaos. Like, I feel anxious as hell and this is chaos. Did you have moments like that, or?
Yes, absolutely. It was. I did feel quite frazzled, and so many moments of frustration where you had to drop, you know, you were in the flow with something and you had to drop it, and then you had to try and come back to it later, and very disjointed. And I think that's probably one of the challenges that when you think about, oh, the convenience of working from home, is that I really then enjoyed having that time working back in a physical space or an office or
when I could actually sit down and do that, complete a task from start to finish, as opposed to just trying to fit it into little pockets of time that I got throughout the day or at night when I was already tired, or because, you know, you're still sleep deprived. And anyone returning to paid work in the first year, is your brain is still not back to normal at all. You know, you are battling sleep deprivation and even just the mental load of motherhood on a daily basis. There's a lot going on up there that you didn't previously have. So yeah, I think we all need to give ourselves a little bit of grace that it's not easy that first year.
And you mentioned something really important there, which is I think we sometimes glorify working from home, and it is good and it does allow for things. But I do think about free return to paid work, me being really sad or stressed about eventually taking my baby to daycare to go into an actual office. And now I'm like, used to hate commute to work, love it now because I'm sitting in silence. You get a coffee on your own and you look at that coffee and you're like, this is like as close to God as I've ever been, because I'm just drinking a coffee on my own. And then you sit in an environment where it's actually just concentrated. So I think that's a really important reminder for anyone that feels, I guess, stressed about that proper, maybe more corporate return to work where it does involve office hours.
You can also leave when you're working from home. It's very hard to leave at work, and the distinction between home and work, they just merge a little bit. So I also found that challenging, because being at home, it was, oh, what's for dinner? And, you know, a load of washing and, you know, all the domestic stuff that's in and around you all the time. There is no clear distinction. So yeah, relishing the opportunity to get back into a physical space was nice.
Oh, I agree. I'm looking forward to that this time around again, because what I'm doing right now is ridiculous. So you're both mothers to three children. What has been the most challenging and the easiest, to make things positive, transition? Firstly, from the mother lens, just becoming a mum to extra children, and then more from that return to work lens, because someone I interviewed recently said that going from two to three was quite good in terms of motherhood, but quite challenging in terms of the return to paid work. What's been your experience, each of you?
Well, we have probably a slightly different experience, because we had a complete gear shift between two and three. So we met after Ariel was pregnant with number two, and I had had number two, and we met pre-COVID. And then
did you like BC? And it's like PC and AC.
Yeah.
And then we lost touch during COVID and then bumped into each other randomly at a local park at the very end of the last lockdown, which was 2021. And I had a 3-week cold, which was my third. And Ariel was about to go in to have that
following week, to have my third. So wow. I think that's like we each shifted into three children during COVID. So
that looks different to an ordinary journey as it was. And I did, some elements were actually not that bad, because it actually slowed. It was a forced slowdown of everything and lack of FOMO because nobody was doing anything anyway. But in terms of like from a career lens for us, that third child was really what, I mean, we'd sort of each had the individual rummagings of a concept or idea that we felt passionate about, and the third children really spurred that creation on. And so that was the complete gear shift. So our return to paid work after the third child looked a lot different, because it was
starting your own business.
Yeah. So I think that I was always planning on going back to work after my daughter was born. The same similar situation. I went out early because I have the very lovely issue of not being able to walk that third trimester. So I went out early on maternity leave with my daughter, and then I was planning on going back to work in July. Flew up to Sydney, had some meetings, was all geared up, ready to go, and then the world shut down in March. So I knew that I didn't want to go back to that corporate environment that I was in before. Like you said, your mind shift. So I actually didn't go back to paid work. I was very much working at home after my daughter was born. So she was, and then I ended up doing a course. So I was doing a course and then found out I was pregnant with, I was studying. And then I found out I was pregnant with my son. Very big surprise. So we were both kind of in a different, so I was coming from a point, like I was like, I'm desperate to get something up and running for myself. I need to do it. I had all of these ideas flowing around because they were kind of, you know, when you're stuck at home for 2 years and I didn't have that outlet of work, I was, you know, doing crafts with my children, which is lovely, but not where I'd like to spend the majority of my time. So I think that you have all these ideas. So I think it was very ripe going into, like after having a third child, I was like, done, ready. I'm not going back to where I was before, which was I've always worked, that corporate environment. Not for me. I can't do it. I've got three children now. And I think that the return to work was kind of, okay, how are we going to make this work? I think COVID really changed a lot for my mental, like what I thought about returning to paid work. Because, and I'm sure most parents can have this who were parents during COVID, like it really changed. You're around your children all the time. Like one, that's enjoyable. And two, you realize like work didn't have to be like it used to be. And if you're going to be away from your children and you're going to be investing in something, it should be in something that you really feel passionately about and that you care about, because that time away from them where it's, you know, mentally stimulating and all of this, it also is, it should be something worthwhile. And I think a real big shift in COVID was like, do I really care about furniture that much? Do I really love it that much? Do I really want to, you know, travel around the world, like picking out tables? Is that really what I want to do? Or do I really want to do something that I find worthwhile to be while I'm, you know, spending my time away from my children?
Which is the perfect segue. Tell us all about from day one now.
Well, this is where we're sitting right now. Well, from those, that third child experience, we spent, as many new mums do, hours walking the streets with newborns in prams. And we were just constantly questioning why there was nowhere for mums to go that was comfortable, safe, warm, inviting, where they could make a new friend or meet another mum that was an existing friend, where they could seek support in the form of classes, education, sessions, why there was nowhere where mothers who weren't just first-time mums could access groups. Being second and then third-time mums ourselves, we still felt incredibly lonely during postpartum, and we were lucky to have each other during that third postpartum, but that also solidified how important it was to have somebody else there going through the motions at the same time.
And we didn't know each other beforehand, so like it wasn't like we were great friends and then started walking. We had met once through a mutual friend, and then caught up again just because, okay, we're going through the same thing at the same time. And that also really resonated with us. Like, it's not like you need, you know, your best friend from childhood to have a baby at the same time. Like, it's about going.
You can form in that postpartum phase because of going through together.
It also speaks to the fact of it being almost a necessity, because you wouldn't necessarily do the things that you do when you're a new mum. Like, I've DM'd other mums that I know live near me to catch up because I know they had a baby around the same time. I would never DM someone and be like, hey, we look like we could be friends. Neither of us have children. Let's hang out. So it speaks to sort of what you actually need as a mum.
Absolutely. Yep. And the space that we wanted to create at that time was a space that was conducive with, as you said, in sliding into someone's DMs, but in real life. So, you know, you could go there and just chat to another mum sitting on the couch next to you and you'd both be in the same place and open to meeting new people.
We really felt like it needed to be a physical space. There's tons of online options, but when we were going through it, we did, again, that coming out of postpartum in COVID, we were able to have focus groups every month for almost a year to, over a year.
2 years.
2 years. Yeah. To speak to moms and see what they wanted and see, because it had to be something really good. We are self-funded and we, this is a big leap to take as opposed to going back to paid work and bringing in a paycheck. We were spending them.
So we knew that there must be other women feeling the same way or going through a similar thing. And we just wanted to, I guess, quantify the, like what we were feeling and the experiences that we had and hear from other mums going through postpartum to see what they felt was lacking and what they would use and need out of a physical space. And we had some incredible interviews and sessions where we would just gather a group of mums in the room and they'd never met before. And just hearing the openness and the vulnerability and the willingness to share with each other and the willingness to listen and support each other, like strangers. The only commonality was that they had babies around the same age. And following each of those groups, women would just contact us and say, that was incredible. Like felt like therapy, if you could actually replicate a feeling like that in a physical space, I would want to come once a week. So for us, having interviewed hundreds of women and speaking to them, we then said, okay, we're going to do this, but it needs to be a physical space, which comes with, you know, timeline and, you know, 9 months to find a physical space. And it had to be the right feel. Like, we didn't want it to feel like a clinic because we didn't want it to feel too medical. And we also didn't want it to be a retail shell that didn't have a soul, or, you know, we want it to feel like a home away from home, where you were coming to someone's lounge room effectively, but a lounge room that you didn't have to clean or prepare food or.
Oh, heaven.
It has all the amenities. So, you know, and that was really the thing. Like, if you forgot your, what are the barriers to getting out when you're especially a first time mom? Because it is just so overwhelming. We make jokes, but it is so overwhelming to think about all of the things that you need to get out of the house for the first time with a baby. Extra nappies and change of clothes and everything that you
change of clothes for yourself.
For yourself, for the baby. What happens if I don't have wipes? What happens if I don't have toys?
I'm uncomfortable feeding in public. You know, where can I change my baby? What if my baby has a meltdown? And we have tried to eliminate all of the reasons why you wouldn't leave the house. And that, I think, has been, a core focus of ours in why it took so long to get the space to where to look and feel the way it feels now, is that we really wanted it to, be a home away from home for mums, that they could come.
Yeah. You can see the thought in each room because it's like how I describe it. It's like, it's clean and modern and homely, but it also has this, like, especially that gorgeous big sort of, what do you call, like, the mother's group meeting space? Is that, I don't know what to call that room.
Yeah, the one with the rounds. Yeah, the membership.
Yeah, like, it's still like, even just down to the choices of your fabrications, it's like clean and modern and minimal, but like has this beautiful, almost grandmotherly touch to it. And it just feels like a space that you want to be in. The women that have been occupying that space, what have you learned from them? Because Neha Roosh, who recently was on the podcast, said something really interesting about the caricature of the mum that's either on maternity leave or taking a career pause, and that society has painted her as someone without much thought, not much intelligence, all of those things. But as we all know, that's just not true. So what have you learned about the sorts of mothers that have walked through your space?
Oh, so much. It really rings true what you're talking about there, because so many of the women that come through talk about how amazing it is to just sit down and have like a really real conversation, and an important conversation that doesn't revolve around your baby. And that's anything from...
So every week we have a different guest expert. So for our mothers groups, we do masterclasses, but every week we have a different guest expert. And I think that it's mentally stimulating. It like fills in for that mental stimulation that you're not, because I think we both have touched on it, that we needed something for ourselves, and you've touched on it as well. You need something for yourself. Like, you come from, and it's that cold turkey of like career, maybe.
And
like,
also no social interaction. You left off the WhatsApp chats. You don't go to any like work events anymore. So that's what used to be your form of social interaction you're not getting anymore. And it's not that women to... Neha Roosh's point, it's not about sitting in a room and having dowdy conversations about like bowel movements of babies and baby vomit and things like that. It's actually really important conversations. It's about what your return to paid work looks like, and conversations to have with your partner,
but your mental health, about your diet and your nutrition, about sleep, about all of these things that pertain to the maternal well-being or the parental well-being. There's a lot of conversations about partners. There's a lot of conversations about
identity.
We've got all
mom rage, resentment, like all of the things that you don't get taught, or people don't really talk about that much until you're right in it.
And I think, yeah, and the conversations that these women are having, all the experts that we have through are constantly surprised at how educated the women are on all the topics, because they are, I think it takes a lot. There's a certain type of person who's going to be coming to our space who feels a need to look out for themselves. And I think that's a commonality, because most of the women here are searching for something, some connection or community or stimulation for themselves, not, you know, a baby sensory class where your baby's lying on the mat and you're waving. This is for them.
And you're just counting the minutes down.
Yeah, you're counting the minutes.
You're like, this is good for them. I feel like I'm a good mom, but when do I get my thing?
Yeah. This is for you. And I think that's the commonality about, you know, that.
One of the moms said the other day, it's a different dynamic here because women are opting in. So when they opt in, they are putting themselves first. They're saying, I am committed to this. I'm coming in, you know, once a week. I am willing to share. I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to connect. I'm willing to grow. I'm willing to, you know, just
they're looking for those things.
Yeah.
They're looking for something for themselves, which is what we find. So I think, and most of these women are, you know, they're all under a year, although we did have our first group coerce us into doing a 12 to 15 month. They didn't want to leave. So we are doing a 12 to 15 month course. It was not our plan, but they're all under a year. So they're in that first year of postpartum. And it's amazing to see what they are doing for themselves after so long of like mothers put last, you know, baby first, family first. It's incredible to watch these women put themselves first. And that's really what we're doing by coming here. And that is not what the vision of postpartum out there is really looking like. But I think that's really, it's a decision. It's a decision that they're making to do something for themselves.
And I think there'd be a lot that you're not surprised that you've sort of found out from having this space and learning from these mums. What has surprised you though, either just in the experiences that they're sharing or feelings that are coming up? What, I guess, are you learning that you didn't expect to learn?
The second time mums have surprised us. They will email us from hospital and say, oh, when's the next group? We'll say, oh, how's your baby? And they'll say, oh, like 24 hours. When can I join? So the second time mums, having been through it before, see the value in community and connection, and they're not afraid to get in the car with their baby. They just want to get out as soon as they feel right, feel ready to. And they're also very committed to making connections because there is no option for them as a second time mum. There is no group. And then,
yeah, I think that I'm continuously surprised at how vulnerable women are willing to be in order to have a shared experience, which is incredible. And, you know, in all of these, like, you know, social media times, everything is bright, shiny, fancy. Look at me and my, you know, beautiful baby, and it's a white blanket and my house is perfect. And I think that what surprised me is, you know, we don't run every session, but the sessions that we're in and we get to hear them being vulnerable and talking about their mental health and how they're looking after themselves and what they're genuinely trying to do for themselves. I mean, I've got an almost 9-year-old, and I think postpartum has changed so drastically in those 9 years. And from where I came from, like, to now, the vulnerability and the conversations that women are willing to have with each other and sharing, you know, stories about mental health struggles or partner struggles or things that are going on in their lives that aren't bright, shiny, and everything's fantastic is incredible, because once one woman speaks, then they all start sharing and they feel that safe space.
And I think what's been incredible, I mean, when we initially started out, we sort of had a few of guest speakers, experts coming in, and it was almost like the expert would lead the session and then, you know, teach, and the women would learn from the expert. But what I guess has surprised us a lot has been the women actually learning from each other. So having the guest speaker in the session and, you know, just facilitating the session really, and then it being just a discussion with the mum, being led by the mums in the group, and them learning as much from each other and supporting each other and, you know, sharing experiences and celebrating each other's wins and working through each other's challenges. And that's been incredible to watch the bonds forming each week with the mums because of what they're going through together.
And because they're willing to share, you know, the groups that have done so well and continued on with each other, the groups that where people feel like it's okay to be themselves and to tell the truth, as opposed to putting on a veneer, which is what we do so often as mothers. Like, we're not honest about the hardships. And like we talked about with birth to postpartum, like why we were all shocked, because maybe it's because, you know, we're all saying that everything's great, whether it's going back to work and like, you know, saying I'm fantastic, or, you know, some people saying, which is what your whole podcast is, it's okay to say,
I found this really hard.
I found this really hard.
Yeah. It must almost feel like, I don't know if maybe this has surprised you too. It's such a sacred thing that you've created. You must sometimes feel like you're sitting in on like some of the most sacred conversations that you can hear with mums.
It's pretty special. Yeah. Just watching the mums actually, you know, want to catch up outside of the space as well. And, you know, they're some of them saying that these are like friends that I'll have for life, and just being able to facilitate that and
changing people's lives.
Yeah.
I think that like when we talked about what's worth it to make, you know, personal, emotional, financial sacrifice for your family, to be away from your family, to leave your kids with other people 3 days a week, to, you know, put all of that in, it has to be worth it. And it's something that we both believe this needs to exist so dearly that we've sacrificed our, like, this is both a change careers, we both have our time, effort, energy. But when we sit in the room, I mean, there's so many days that like we both text each other, okay, this is why we're doing this. Like, would it be easier for to go get a job in a shop and just bring home money and go shopping and do whatever? Yes, but we do it because there are moments every single week that we're like, oh my God, this is incredible.
Mm. And just even celebrating the mums, you know, they come in here and they meet as mums, but it's so incredible to see that it also draws out elements of that they were someone before they were a mum, and they do get to sort of bring elements of that in here as well. Like, whilst obviously they're bonding over the fact that they each have babies the same age, they are really getting to have conversations above and beyond just being defined as a mum. And yes, of course, it is a space for mums, but the whole purpose of the groups is that they do feel that sense of identity coming back and having a space where they feel safe enough to not be defined by.
In our session this morning, we had a whole conversation about what everyone was reading.
Yeah, I love that.
Like, they were recommending
last week was podcast recommendation.
Yeah. Like, what are you guys reading?
I hope you plugged Ready or Not.
Of course. We do every week.
Just kidding.
We do. But they like talk about things aside from children. Like, they talk about themselves and their lives. Like, oh, I've read this really great book. I can bring it in next week if anyone is looking for something. It's like what you would get at that workplace lunch, but here. And I think that
it's celebrating this phase of life and actually making it fun.
That's so beautiful. And I could keep talking about what you're discovering and learning there, but, you know, we've all got children that we need to go to, which is part of the whole reason I created this podcast, how we make work work alongside our children. So my last question for you both, if you could go back to the new mum versions of yourselves, what would be the one piece of advice you'd give them?
It's going to be okay. Like, everything seems really heightened in those early days, and you feel like you've lost everything of who you were, but you're kind of becoming who you are. Like, if that makes sense, like, yes, that's who you were, but you're becoming a different person. And with this phase of life, there are things that you may have lost with having a child, but there's so many things you're going to gain in knowledge, in empathy, in relationships and friendships. Like, there's so many things you're going to gain. And it does, in those early days of motherhood, it does, like, going back to that shock, it does feel shocking and you feel like, who am I? But I feel like you do come out the other side, and especially we're coming out of the baby phase with our almost three-year-old. It gets better. Like, it gets more fun, and it gets, and everything's going to work out. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. Early motherhood is like all encompassing, and everything revolves around, it's like it's minute by minute, some points of it. And I think just remembering, I would have loathed being told, you know, everything's a phase, but it is like, when you are in early motherhood, it is a phase. Like, the good is a phase, the bad is a phase, like the bad sleep is a phase, everything is a phase. And you just have to be kind to yourself, because you really are doing the best you can with what you have at any moment. And
You need to celebrate the wins. Moms don't celebrate their wins. Like, we don't, we're not kind to ourselves. Like, I just want, like, we don't celebrate, like, yes, we've done a good job. Like, we need to do that.
Yeah, we do need to do that. Oh, I never do that. I'm going to, actually, I did say to my husband before, because I have the two kids with me on a Tuesday and I have two podcast interviews tonight. So I was like, that's actually a pretty decent work day when you include the unpaid work and the paid work. And I made dinner just before he got home before. And I was like, I've done a lot today for having two kids with me. So there you go. So hopefully everyone listening does that today. Look at what you've done today. You don't even have to have cooked dinner. Like, if you kept your kids fed, job done.
Yes. One thing, just be kind to yourself and just say, yes, I've done a good job today. I feel like we don't.
Yes, exactly.
That's the task to anyone listening. Before we go, let us know, where can people find you both in person and online?
Our business from day one is based in Prahran in Melbourne, and you can find it on Instagram from day one with double underscore in between, and also our website fromdayone.com.au.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to Ready or Not. If you liked the show, please tell your friends, subscribe or write a review. You can also find us on Instagram at readyornot.pod. That's it for today. We'll see you next time.